This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
From Joy 94.9, this is Saturday Magazine.
Saturday Magazine. My name is Fiona Brooke and I am filling in the shoes for Macca today. I'm here with Ange Barry, the Joy CEO. Welcome to the studio, Ange.
Thank you very much, Fiona. Lovely to be here.
So today we will be bringing you news and updates from Sally Capp, the Lord Mayor of Melbourne. Welcome, Sally.
Good morning, good morning. Lovely to be here.
And heaps more, of course. It's going to be a fantastic show. So across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, this is Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9 flagship news, current affairs and lifestyle program, an eclectic mix of local and national news, current affairs and lifestyle stories, all framed within a queer perspective. I think that one thing we probably should do, first of all, is talk to Ange about what she's been doing at Joy, because you have been completely flat out pushing pens around pieces of paper and computers.
Absolutely, Fiona. Well, I'm still kind of a newbie, but not anymore, I guess.
You started on August the 5th, right?
So four to 5 weeks getting my feet under the desk, so to speak, and meeting the beautiful Joy family, such an amazing group of people. And there are so many members of our family, as you all know, so over 250 volunteers. So I'm getting used to names and remembering names. I'm a bit of a fan of maybe we need name tags for each other, but
I'd be up for that. I'm shocking with
It'll
names.
Be uniforms next.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. That'd be great. Actually, we'd have so much fun with that. What I've been up to is getting to know the team, getting to know the board, but also working very quickly on, funding and future directions of Joy and how we can create an organisation that can sustain itself throughout the course of achieving its mission. And I know that sounds a little bit sort of airy-fairy, but my background is a business and not-for-profit background combined. And so I always look at working in an organisation in the leadership role. How can we do what we want to do? How can we achieve our mission in a way that generates income to sustain our activities, which is really about our community purpose? So here at Joy, I've been working with the team to look at, we have a fantastic product. Our radio and podcasting product is terrific, great content. How can we spread that word and that message even further to make a more inclusive Australia? So we're starting to reach out to workplaces and, you know, how we can assist workplaces to become more inclusive. So a few of our funding applications are centering around Joy being able to develop these kind of products, podcasting, training sorts of products.
Right, so Joy is an educational sort of aspect and a community, like a service.
Absolutely, absolutely, because we've got so much knowledge and experience within our community of how to make this country more inclusive. That's what we've all lived, and so we now need to really share that with the broader community. And I think particularly on the back of the marriage equality success, I think the Australian community wants to know more about us and support us, but also how they can be more inclusive in their practice. So that's a role that I see Joy is naturally suited to do.
And of course you're under, not only with you as the new CEO, but of course Macca is now chair, is that correct?
President.
President?
Yeah.
So he's so there's quite a bit of newness on the board, and then with yourself. So there's a lot of revitalisation, which of course is essential in a organisation such as Joy and as a non for profit.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's a natural cycle for any community group that there are changes in leadership. And I think working with Macca is and has been terrific already, and will be fantastic. We both come from that similar, I guess, desire to see Joy really thrive, but also take some responsibility for our funding. So, you know, any community organisation needs a really good mix around the table, I like to call it. So we need government support, local government support, we need community support, philanthropic and corporate support, but we also need to look at how we can create our own income streams, and we're both on that.
Oh, wow. That does sound like you have quite a lot of fingers in lots of pies
yes,
at this
yeah,
point.
Totally, yeah. That's my background as well, is looking at, you know, creating income streams too. So I've got a bit of history in that space, and I look forward to doing that work. And we've started already, I must say, at Joy. So it's an exciting time.
And also you have done some magazine-style radio before. And been behind the microphone?
I have. One of my regular co-hosts was my three-year-old daughter, Hope, and she was fantastic. She'd just sit there and throw in the odd giggle. But this is a long time ago now. We're talking about 17 years ago at Plenty Valley FM, which is a fellow community radio station on the northeast of Melbourne. And it was actually established as one of Melbourne's first emergency broadcasters, right on the edge of our Green Wedge. So looking after Kangaroo Ground and Christmas Hills, areas that were actually quite devastated in the bushfires. So, and of course, when it's not fire season, we make great radio, just as Joy does. So it was a magazine show, very similar to SatMag, and I had lots of fun, got to interview some amazing people, meet great people, as you do through radio. So this is fantastic. This is history happening again now.
It is. And we have, of course, one of our regulars, Sally Capp. Thank you so much for coming in to hang out with us again, Sally. I'm so excited about some of those delicious little Asian buns that you brought in. What are they symbolising?
Well, it's the Mid-Autumn Lantern Festival today in Chinatown. And this evening at about 6, in Little Bourke Street, there will be an enormous festival and the feature, beautiful lanterns, big, small, lots of giveaways for kids particularly, kids' lanterns. And I'm pleased to say lots of mooncakes that are absolutely delicious.
Yum.
So it's about rejuvenation and renewal, which is a little bit about what you've just been talking about. But, of course, always lots happening around the city. But I thought I'd bring some little tasty morsels in just to get you going.
They will definitely be. We'll be snogging on those during the news. But interestingly, because it's an autumn festival, but it's really spring.
Well, it is here, but in the northern hemisphere.
It is autumn.
Where we like to do these things at the same time so that we're sharing it with people around the world and celebrating at the same time. It feels like autumn. It feels like winter.
Who can tell? I mean, one day, another day.
Good old Melbourne.
Good old Melbourne. That's exactly right. I have listened to some interesting stories about how, or sort of facts about why Melbourne weather is the way it is. Mm-hmm. And we're not the only city in the world to have extreme drops in temperature. Mm. It's just that we notice it mostly because all the massive extreme drops of temperature we have here happen in the summertime.
Oh, yes.
Whereas in the northern hemisphere, cities like San Francisco, for example, they also experience extreme temperature drops in short periods of time, but because it's in wintertime, it's less noticeable.
Interesting. But doesn't that make us great travellers? Because we're adaptable. Melburnians are so adaptable, and I'm sure it's got something to do with our weather variation.
Can I just say I'm sitting here looking out two windows. At one window here at Joy, it's blue sky. And as I look at the other one, it's grey clouds. That is Melbourne.
And that segues nicely into our first topic with you, Sally. That's Melbourne's livability.
Oh, yes.
Number two again.
Look, this time last year when the livability index came out, I was a brand new Lord Mayor and we went from one to two. Devastated.
Devo.
But I've come to understand lots of things about this livability index. And one, it's really important that we do participate in these indexes because it gives us a good sense of benchmarking against other cities. Mm. And the fact is we continue to score really well. We had 7 years at number one, which I think is a record that it'll be difficult to break, and we're certainly not going to let Vienna do that.
No,
so we're working on that. But to be in amongst the top cities in the world, particularly when we're experiencing such incredible population growth and the pressures that come onto our lifestyle, onto our infrastructure, the fact that objective people from around the world have come here to look at our city and they still rate us so highly is something we can be very proud of. We're also looking at those areas where we can improve. The great thing about benchmarks is it means that we can celebrate ranking highly, but also we could never be complacent. So we are working away on those areas where we can improve.
We have had some listener feedback. Monocle magazine, which is hyper cool publication from the UK, has recently put out its list as well this month, and Melbourne is in the top 15, but we don't know what number in the top 15. 317, thank you for your feedback. If you can get enlighten us as to where in the top 15.
Probably 15. That's
maybe
why
15.
We're saying top 15. So, if we were 16, top 16.
It could be. Yeah, well, that's right. And who wants to be in the top 16? That just doesn't mean anything to anybody. And, we have a question for you, Sally. So we've heard that, hang on, let me just get rid of that. We've heard from some of the councillors and candidates that the City of Melbourne Act. Do you know what the City of Melbourne Act is about?
Of course.
The City of Melbourne Act doesn't work well for residents. Should there be changes? What about proposed local government changes?
Arianne?
Arianne.
Well, lovely to hear from you. And yes, it's true. The City of Melbourne has its own act that then integrates in with the Local Government Act 1989, and that's currently under review. One of the peculiarities of the City of Melbourne Act is that it allows business owners and landowners to also vote in our elections. I think that really reflects that there's a very big commercial heart to the City of Melbourne. And so we have extra people that are entitled to vote. So there's the electoral roll, which is based on where you live. Mm-hmm. And then there's a City of Melbourne roll for people that are registered as landowners and business owners.
And they get two votes, is that correct?
Sometimes they do. It's quite complicated and I'm still getting my mind around that. The City of Melbourne Act isn't part of the current review of the Local Government Act, but this certainly comes up in, I think, most of the recent elections for local government here in the City of Melbourne, and something that has been raised with the local government minister. So it'll be part of an ongoing discussion. But at the moment, the current review is quite an extensive review right across the Local Government Act, and that's taking a lot of time and effort, and I think there'll be some great results.
I imagine, Sally, having a business or owning land in the City of Melbourne as a commercial business owner or investor, that entitles you to vote, given that your property, your business is directly impacted by the goings-on of the City of Melbourne. So it makes sense, I guess, that individuals plus business and landowners, and perhaps if you own the land and have a business, you may be entitled to two votes, for instance.
Some properties or businesses are owned by a corporation, and in those circumstances you get two.
Ah, I see.
So, okay. And, you know, for example, perhaps Joy has two. I don't know.
Right.
But one of the observations from the last election there was a review done by the Victorian Electoral Commission showed that the proportions of votes have now become more equal. So the proportion of residents has gone up, which means that their influence on the election has also gone up. So some of the, I think, urgency around this issue is dissipating. But nonetheless, I really take the point. It's important that we're always listening to our residents.
Mm. Yes.
And this week I spent some time with what's called Residents 3000 Group at their AGM, listening to issues and things that they're passionate about. And on Monday I'm with what's called the EastEnders Group, and I've got, North Melbourne in a couple of weeks, and really making sure that our residents have very direct ways of giving us feedback. I know lots of councillors do the same thing. It's that interaction that's just so important.
That's great. And I guess a reflection that Melbourne as a city, I remember in my childhood, it was mainly a business and restaurant and entertainment space.
Well, it was
space.
The 80s.
Even in, yeah,
it
even,
was all
yeah,
business.
Absolutely.
And
nobody was living here physically.
Exactly. And that's what really changed. Yeah. We were described as a moribund city in a rust bucket state back in the 80s.
Yes. Okay.
And one of the major changes that happened was that the City of Melbourne councillors during that decade of the 80s showed amazing leadership, including our first two female Lord Mayors, Leckie Order and Winsome McCackie.
Yes.
And they introduced what is still regarded as one of the most transformational urban policies, which is called Postcode 3000. And terrific. That said, let's prioritise residents over business in terms of planning. So we'd been building a lot of commercial buildings and all of a sudden it became more attractive to do apartments. Mm. And we've seen the proliferation. In the HODL grid in the 80s, there were 100 people registered as residents.
Yes.
In the HODL grid today, there are 41,119 people in that same area.
Spellbinding.
And they are the heartbeat of the city and it's just wonderful.
Well, I have to say that in the 80s, I lived in the CBD.
Really?
I think it was
one
probably,
of the 100.
I think it was probably illegal. But we were living in a warehouse, which somebody converted into, and they took the bathrooms and whacked a shower in there, and the shower
did they
looked
have
out
a planning permit, Fiona?
You're worrying,
this is
Sally
something
now.
I really wouldn't know. But there were three flights and there were some fashion designers down there because, you know, in the 80s, late 80s, there had to be a fashion designer or nothing was really happening. And there was a design firm and then there were some artists and there were some musicians and myself and a good friend who we lived there and it was this kooky spot and when you went out for breakfast in the morning, there was nothing.
Yeah.
There was just like, you know, a Greasy Joe down on the corner where you could get a sleazy cup of coffee.
Yeah.
But it was really great because it was also the same time that a lot of cool nightclubs were in Melbourne. So it was a great location.
You could
for
just wander home
when you were like 19.
Yeah, you were start of the change of the city. And it is one of the things that people appreciate about this city is that you meet locals when you walk around the streets of Melbourne. And you see people walking their dogs or walking kids to school. And you now can go and get a coffee everywhere.
Everywhere.
You can even get a bottle of milk if you need it. And it's that culture, that sense of people live here that is livability. They want to live here and we rank very highly in that in the indexes.
I think that change gave us a heartbeat because I remember the days when you would go home after work and Melbourne would be quiet, so quiet, and it wasn't necessarily attracting people to come in and, you know, spend the evening. And now we have a heartbeat and it feels like we are a true city and community 24/7. That's terrific.
Well, that's probably, I mean, Dylan pointed out to me earlier that Sydney is number three. And I think that one of them, I mean, and I love Sydney, it's a great town, but one of the beautiful things that Melbourne has, of course, is we have that central heartbeat.
Yes.
Which they are building in Sydney, in the city of Sydney, but Melbourne has that sort of, you can come into the city at any time of the night or day and it will be thriving. I mean, and then you've got so many incredible festivals, whether it be Fringe Festival or Comedy Festival or, of course, currently Fashion Festival. Fashion Week. There are people around all the time and so, you know, it's a... that's, I think, is one of the major reasons. But as we were saying before, you don't run the Greater Melbourne, which is a shame because you'd be really good at it. But then, you know, there'd be not enough time in the day. You'd have to divide yourself up into 49 different people.
I do get people writing to me from all over Victoria about things that they're passionate about. Mm. Yeah, and I really appreciate that. It's interesting to know what's driving people in other communities. I do have to write back and say, unfortunately, I can't help them other than to steer them in the right direction. But Melbourne does have a sense of, you know, one really big community and there's a lot of pride and I think that's something we should be grateful for. Look, compared to other cities, we are awesome.
Agreed.
Indeed. And we have some great feedback from one of our regular listeners, Melina. Melina says, I love Sally Capp. She's such a great representative for our city. Refreshing to hear strong and sassy women on the radio this morning. That's us,
keep
ladies.
Keep up the great work, Fiona, it says as well, Fiona.
Oh,
I love it.
Too humble there.
It's nice to have Dylan here, though.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. We wouldn't be happening without Dylan.
That's right. We would just be talking into silence. So thanks, Dylan. Sally, some of the things I think is important to actually discuss is around safety and security because, I mean, that is something you're working on. Tell us about that.
And an area where we need to keep improving, unfortunately, as cities grow and modern cities around the world really struggling with some of these issues around safety and security for our citizens. I'm really pleased to say that a lot of it is perception. The reality is that our crime stats have gone down year on year. But the perception issue is very much driven, I think, by some of these random acts of extreme violence that are just so difficult to detect. And so one of our main areas of initiatives is very much around deterrence. How can we deter people from even contemplating these things? And that's why programs such as our Bollards program has been really important. And we've just finished Bourke Street Mall with extra bollards. There are now 151 bollards around that Bourke Street Mall area. It's one of our high pedestrian zones down at Flinders Street Station. We finished that, Princess Bridge.
I must say,
so we'll keep moving on those.
Yeah, I think the bollards on Princess Bridge were very elegantly done, because that was a tough one.
In close consultation with Heritage Victoria, given the status of that bridge, and it is one of our number one selfie spots as well. So the number of complaints we had when we had those very ugly temporary red and white plastic bollards there for a long, long time, we were ruining people's wedding shots and you know, happy holiday snaps. And I'm really pleased with where we've ended up there. It's lovely.
The concept of installing bollards is a really tricky one, because they're absolutely essential. And I recently came back from a trip overseas for 6 months of travelling, and they're everywhere in Europe, absolutely everywhere, and they need to be. I think the ones in Bourke Street Mall in particular are really sleek, and I walked down there for lunch. It's not far down the road. And I have to say, they're quite sleek and almost inconspicuous in some ways because of the way they've been designed and they blend in. And that's a really good thing. It doesn't feel like they're a barrier. It actually just feels like it's part of, I guess, the architecture of the space, which is good.
Big tick. We do that program with the state government. But you're absolutely right. We have to provide safety, and we're going for the highest levels we can. But you also need to be able to allow pedestrian traffic to flow well.
Yes.
And you still want to be a welcoming city.
Absolutely.
So it's a difficult balance.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, of course, speaking about Heritage Victoria, you would be working very closely with them on the restoration of the Queen Victoria Sheds.
How exciting is this?
Queen Victoria Market Sheds.
Yes. The Queen Victoria Market Restoration Project is now underway. $11 million of investment in bringing those magnificent sheds. It's that sense of authenticity and the history. And one of the exciting things, apart from the fact that it's going to look magnificent, is that we are able to engage the most amazing, I call them artisans, you know, carpenters and painters and people that understand that history and have the skills of how they were developed in the first place, and taking us right back to making sure that it's completely authentic and real. And it's just lovely to think that we've got those very talented people around the market doing that important work.
Well, when they repainted the Palais Theatre in St Kilda, they did such a beautiful restoration. I mean, who would have thought that that colour yellow would have looked so great.
Yeah.
But that really brought the building back to life. It's the original colour of the building, and then you go, oh, it was this yucky sort of dirty old white colour before. So actually heritage traditions, which you might think are dated, in actual fact can really make the shed sing. But that must be quite a lot of work.
Oh, it's going to take us quite a while. It's painstaking work. It's got to be so thoughtful and considerate, and, you know, have to source the right materials and colours and look back into history. So all of that care and dedication is currently underway, and it's exciting.
So, Sally, will it be a staged approach?
Yes.
So market will still run as normal. People still
good
come to
question,
the market.
Good question, Ange. Yes. Open for business. Very
open
important.
Open for business as usual.
Exactly. So the traders being wonderful, and we're coordinating the work, and sometimes it'll mean a bit of a shift here and there, but it's all going to happen with the market trading full pelt.
I think us Melburnians are getting quite used to the fact that there needs to be work to make or enable our city to adapt to our growth, but also to respect our heritage. So I personally feel like we're sort of getting used to work in progress happening around us, and that's okay. That's just something we need to accept, and it still doesn't stop us from being a livable city, as we can see. We're still right up there. So good on Melbourne. We're having balance, aren't we?
Good. Acknowledging people's patience and an understanding of short-term pain for long-term gain. I think that's the saying.
Yeah.
We've seen it with the rail crossing changes. Mm. We've seen it with certainly down at South Bank Boulevard for us, where we've had that road closed around that really important.
Ongoing.
People have been so patient. Yeah. And then the Melbourne Metro project that the state government's doing, that's just been amazing to see how people have adjusted around the city.
And the impact of that project and the projects you're discussing as well is going to be fantastic for Melbourne. So I think people are, you know, starting to look at it and think, yeah, okay, it might be a little bit uncomfortable, or it may mean I have to go a different way to work, or, you know, find a solution. But actually, that's what you do in a city that is evolving versus a city that stays still and, you know, never addresses the issues. So,
well, I think that sometimes we have discussed on this show about how the traffic, the amount of traffic that goes through Melbourne to get to the other side. Mm-hmm. And I must admit, I am guilty of using Melbourne as a through, you know, travelling from south side to north side for meetings. And when that was told that...
It's you, Fiona.
It is me. You're doing and when it. I was told Stop that Flint Putterford Street was closing, I almost went into a tears going, oh, how am I going to get around? But it is interesting to think about how, you know, I have to think about some alternatives now. And it's tricky because, you know, it feels like you have to go a long way out of the way to get around...
Yes, in sorry some about places, that. Yeah. But look, if we can guide people towards taking different routes and using different pathways, in the long term, we really are trying to ease congestion. Of course, having the Melbourne Metro, once that's finished in the next 5 years, that's an extra 500,000 people that will be able to be carried around on that train network and really open up public transport. And the great thing that Melbourne does is whenever new public transport is delivered, people use it, and that should really ease the congestion on our roads.
That's substantial, 500,000 people. That's fantastic. What I'd say, I live in the outer northeastern suburbs of Melbourne in the Green Wedge, so I'm very lucky. I live out in Eltham. Suburbs like mine, this is out of your control completely, but as a result, I guess, of a growing city, we need car parking at train stations. We need encouragement to use public transport because we're the ones like Fiona who are driving from, you know, northeast right into the city, and anybody that's used the Eastern Freeway will know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, there is congestion and we need behaviour change. And my daughter and I started using the T2 transit lane, and we have become the police of that transit lane. So when we see anybody ahead of us with one person in the car, we're both like, one, you sure? Yeah, check it out. Yep, yep, that's definitely one person. Right. Give them a dirty look as we go past. Yes.
We better get you deputised.
But definitely there needs to be that encouragement, I think, for behaviour change for, you know, for Melbourne, because we're probably used to driving because we are a spread out city, and I'm talking Greater Melbourne, but we need to now think differently.
Well, Australians are definitely wedded to their vehicles, and trying to prize them away from their cars is quite a challenge for sure. So, but I think that more exciting is Fashion Festival, Fashion Week. I mean, you know, I've seen so many beautifully dressed people as I've wandered through the city over the last few days. It's really lovely. Are you going to anything for Fashion Festival?
Well, Fiona, I'm so sorry to tell you that it just finished, but it was magnificent week, and I did get to quite a few things. Very lucky. We had more than 150 events. The majority of them, 85% of those, were free, which I just love, because fashion is about creativity. Yep. It's a very important industry for us. And we had a fabulous industry forum as well that was sold out, with some experts from around the world, plus some of our homegrown experts talking about the future of fashion and also the future of retail, which was really interesting.
It's changing so much.
Exactly. The bricks and mortar and how that interacts with online, and the fact that people are really looking for an experience.
Yes, yes. I often wonder, my daughters both shop online, and I often wonder, you know, the thing for me about fashion is going into the shop, trying it on, you know, looking at myself in the mirror, looking on the
That's
racks.
That's the bit I hate the most, Ange.
Well, I don't always, okay, I am lying, I don't always try everything on. In fact, often I'll go, right, I'm not trying that on. But when I really, you know, fashion is about actually that experience, that, you know, that tactile in the moment experience. And I wonder how does that happen now for people, you know, with online buying?
Well, we had this very interesting expert from the United States. His name's Doug, and he talked about the way that online and bricks and mortar are integrating, and the way he described it working more and more in the United States is that you... And Nordstrom is a really big department store, and yes, they're doing these smaller stores. So you look online for what you want, and you might choose a whole lot of things. You can go to that Nordstrom store at a designated time, and you can try those things on. You can take what you want, and then you leave what you don't. You can look at some other things while you're there. But the stock in the store is what people have asked to try on and look at. So you can come and touch and feel it. You can see what it looks like. No obligation at all to buy.
Right.
And I think that sounds really interesting. That's, you can have a coffee while you're there.
That is another step forward, isn't it?
Yeah.
From the retail perspective of saying, okay, it's almost like come and pick up your shopping, but you don't have to take all the shopping. That is really clever, actually.
It's clever, like, and it's really important to us because we really want people to still come in and interact in the city. Yep. All our neighbourhoods need that, all of our strip shopping areas. Mm. And the fact is that we want people to be engaging and talking and connecting, because that is part of what makes healthy communities.
Yes, for sure.
We can't all sit at home with a screen in front of us.
No.
No, I'm not an online shopper. I mean, I do think it's probably generational to say that to certainly, I mean... I work with a whole team of people. They all the girls shop online.
Yes.
I'm not an online shopper. I like to go in, try it on. If I don't like it, I don't buy it. And sometimes I don't buy it even if I do like it. I wander around, I have a think about it, I have a cup of coffee or a glass of wine. You know, I mean, it is for me an experience, and sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not so good depending on where you are. But anyway, so that's fashion.
That's been good. And look, it's one of the great things about the Fashion Week is we also do focus on students. Mm. We have some fantastic fashion students here. What are their pathways? And we had students that came in from China and Japan, two of our longer sister city relationships.
Yes.
And it was just wonderful to see how they loved being in Melbourne. They loved being part of the fashion show, and that excitement of the fact that they can see their creations on a runway was exhilarating and just wonderful to see all that new energy.
Well, Sally, we've had some great feedback, actually. Well, I can tell you that the Monocle list, Melbourne came number 11.
11?
11.
That's fantastic.
Which is pretty amazing for the
hyper-hip
publication. And Greg has called in to say, Sally does amazing things for people with disabilities in Melbourne, especially regarding accessibility.
Thank you, Greg.
Big tick there.
Congratulations.
And then, of course, from the lovely 317, we saw Tina Arena yesterday at the Writers Festival along with Deborah Cheatham. Wow.
Wow.
The best city that allows artists to engage in deep conversation about their careers and identity. I was blown away.
Mm.
Well, big chook us to the Writers Festival for all of their incredible talent. Marika Hardy does an amazing job.
Yes.
It's a stellar program. It really is.
I think that we've hit a lot of topics today.
We have.
And I can't believe that's it. For
really?
Yeah. We've come to the end of your segment.
I've loved it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in again. Thanks for the cakes.
Lovely to talk with you, Sally.
Enjoy.
Yeah,
and
really
congratulations
good.
On your role. Look
thank
forward
you.
To seeing you again, Ange, and all the success that you're going to drive.
Well, thank you so much. Mm, yeah. I'm sure we'll do it in partnership with you guys, for sure. Well,
definitely. Dylan, nice to see you.
Nice to see you too.
Lovely
thank
to see you, Sally.
Bye.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.